Welcome to Gogcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And last episode, we both counted down our 10 favorite AE remixes, and we're back to discuss 10 more. This time, selected by our listeners. We weren't super scientific about it or anything, but we got lots of emails on the remixes and basically picked 10 that kept coming up again and again, but somehow didn't make our personal lists. And spoiler alert, they're also very good. So next episode, we're going to dive into another large chunk of odds and ends surrounding Autechre's main discography, their collaborations with the Hafler Trio. We've barely received any emails on this stuff at all, and having listened to it a lot over the past week, I can't say I blame you, but we want your opinions and hot takes anyway. Gogcastpod@gmail.com. Real quick before we get started, I don't like pay as close attention to the Twitter as you do, Dan, which is at Gogcastpod, by the way. But there was like some breaking news. A lot of people were excited about some reissues.
Yeah, I'm the social media manager here at Gogcast Industries. Someone had posted on the Reddit, the Autechre Reddit, that LP5's album cover changed on Spotify, or on I think they had Apple Music, but I checked it on Spotify. You know, so everybody, you know, the rumor started swarming, if I can speak, about you know, LP5 reissues, and, you know, what would that include since last time they did 3, and, you know, came down to it, Chiastic Slide and LP5 are getting reissues in November on vinyl.
But the Chiastic one was like, I mean, who discovered that?
Yeah,
because
that was
like, it didn't change. You had to zoom in and notice the little date in the writing.
Yeah, that was wild. Someone posted that on Reddit too. Because I mean, LP5 was obviously, it went from black to like cardboard. Yeah. But yeah, Chiastic Slide, you had to like zoom in and someone read the copyright date that's written on the front cover.
That was sneaky of them, really sneaky.
Yeah, no, it was a cool way to do, you know, it was only one day ahead of time, but you know,
yeah,
it makes you feel special when you notice, you know.
Yeah, right. Well, certainly exciting, but let's dive into today's topic. And I kind of want to start by discussing an email from listener Wendell. Wendell was a little bit disappointed by our last episode, our top 10 remixes. And I feel bad about that because he was one of the first people to write in and urge us to talk about the remixes, like way back, you know, a couple weeks into this podcast. But I think his complaints will help us revisit some of the big picture stuff we started off with last time. The email's a little long, so you want to take the first bit, Dan, and we'll just go back and forth?
Yeah. Wendell writes, "I admit I had high hopes for the remix episode. While still found it a worthwhile listen and would recommend it, I realized I should have tempered my expectations somewhat. First off, the expectation that the original would be listened to before being compared with the remix was unreasonable on my part due to the sheer volume of remixes they've done. You're only human, after all. Second, I was surprised both by your general disinterest in remixing overall, though I guess this is just a taste thing, and by the fact that you've missed AE's remixing as connected to their origins in hip-hop. Remixes and versions are a significant part of the hip-hop and urban dance music culture of the 80s and early 90s, though it was certainly more difficult to do with equipment from the 80s. Just the act of making a 12-inch extended remix for the dance floors back then was an ordeal with tape splicing and using samplers with very short sampling times compared with our world of DAWs today."
Wendell continues, "Third, the premise that Autechre are indifferent to the source material is just not correct, though it varies depending on what they are remixing. They have stated that they are fans of Earth, which is why that remix hardly does anything to the source material. They were too precious about it. Conversely, they didn't have any stake in Skinny Puppy, hence why their remix of Killing Game is so unconcerned with the source material and just mutilates it. As a Skinny Puppy fan, it didn't matter that they don't like Skinny Puppy because I got this wild remix out of it. Honestly, it's odd to me to think that AE, quote, don't give a shit about the tracks they are remixing in general. I think this may speak more to your own disinterest in remixes in general compared with an artist's main discography. This latter part is fine and makes sense to me. However, when you have statements from them saying they actually like much of what they are remixing, you're going into the overthinks it realm. I would argue that in many instances, AE do justice to the source material by pushing it further in a direction the original artist didn't or even couldn't because the remixer is free to play around with it in a way the original artist isn't."
In closing, Wendell writes, "Unfortunately, I think you guys were prisoners of your format for this episode. Coming upon an AE remix in the wild is a completely different experience than listening to them as a compilation. I would hate to approach their remixes all at once this way. It would be overwhelming and feel incoherent, which would affect how I felt and thought about the individual tracks. It's best to be familiar with the original tune before you even hear the remix. Knowing and loving the Tortoise and Stereo Lab songs first led me to enjoy and care about the AE remixes far more deeply than I suspect I would if I just heard the remixes on their own or the original only a couple times before hearing the remix."
Yeah, so first off, I think it's totally true that we basically ignored the origins of remixing, which artists like Autechre must definitely have been into, and instead focused on the 90s remix craze, which must have been a bit of a chore for them. So what do you think about that? Were we wrong to assume that the guys like don't really enjoy remixing at all?
I mean, I'm sure they do. I don't think we said they flat out don't enjoy it. I think we, you know, or at least what I meant was that they don't enjoy all the ones they have to do. You know, I think because of that 90s craze, they got offered a lot more than they do later and, you know, obviously earlier. And I think that shows just when you look at all the remixes, like the bulk of them are from the 90s, you know. I don't think that they dislike doing it completely. I mean, because the listener's right, you know, that is such a, you know, thing from hip hop and everything that they grew up in. So I'm sure they like the general idea of it. I just don't think they wanted to, you know, do quite as many as they probably had to, either from Warp or just, I mean, that was the way to get your name out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. And what's confusing about it is that there are two, I think, contexts for Autechre's remixing specifically. One is, they obviously cut their teeth on remixing, right? They talk in interviews about that's how they got started. I'm sure that's how a lot of these electronic juggernauts got started. Mm-hmm. Not just making their own remixes, you know, splicing and sampling and looping and all that, but listening to other people's mixes. And so there's that context, which is really rich and interesting and fascinating. And then there's this other context, which kind of sucks, right? Which is like this 90s fad of every, you know, indie and pop artist that wanted to seem cool and hip had to get some cool electronic artist to remix their stuff. I started thinking of it. I want to know what you think about this analogy, but like the 60s, I almost see that as sort of like a parallel explosion in creativity to the 90s electronic scene, which is you had all these artists come out, you know, doing covers primarily, right? Like the Beatles or the Rolling Stones doing, you know, Chuck Berry, Little Richard stuff. And then they started to get much more interested in doing original work. And that was like kind of this creative flourishing. Like almost the same thing, I think, happened to electronic music, which it was almost like a primarily a remixing art form. And then as the 90s came around, it became primarily an original composition and sound design thing. The difference is that in the 90s, for sort of economic, like music marketplace reasons, all these artists had to keep remixing. Whereas, you know, you could just imagine like how much the Beatles would have resented if they had to do like a couple covers every year. Now, they probably would have done amazing shit with it, which is true of Autechre's remixes, but you can imagine how they would resent it. You know what I mean? Do you think that parallel holds any water?
I think that's a great parallel. You know, I mean, the Beatles, yeah, the first record, all covers except is it one or two songs, and then I think it's two or one, and then you know they do like one or two later on, and that's it. Because yeah, you're right. Like that used to be the business to get a record, right? You basically had to do,
and they cut their teeth on it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, like exactly.
That's how they learned how to be a band.
Yeah, they were a band in Hamburg. They weren't playing, you know, Love Me Do every night. You know, they're playing Chuck Berry and whatnot. And yeah, I think I mean it's just easier to get. You know, people want something that's familiar, especially your average, you know, just listener that's not listening to an Autechre podcast. You know, they want the familiarity of songs they know. So when you go to, you know, this random club in Hamburg and you see some band playing, you know, the Chuck Berry song you like, you that band doesn't really have to win you over because you already know that song. You already like that song. I mean, it happens today. You go in a bar and stuff. But yeah, I think the remix is essentially that same thing because you know, electronic music, hip hop, all that stuff, it doesn't lend itself to covering. It's too like hip hop, it's too personal, like in the sense that, you know, like frequently use their own name. You know, the Beatles never singing about how they're the Beatles, you know,
right.
Whereas like every rapper says their name over and over. And then, you know, electronic music, there's always sort of like, it's not a guitar, a drum, you know, a bass and a singer, you know, like I don't have the equipment that Ottaker has. I don't, you know, and neither does really anybody except Ottaker. You can't really like, I mean, someone's going to YouTube send us somebody playing an Ottaker song on the guitar.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure people cover like electronic
songs. It's a different thing.
But
it's different.
It's totally different, but it's just like there's some parallel there, which
yeah,
is that
I think the remix.
You could kind of grow your name by remixing in the same way you could grow your name by covering stuff back in the 60s.
Exactly.
But I mean, this kind of leads me to like the one part of Wendell's. I mean, I think Wendell's right to bring that up. That is an important part of the context, part of the picture that we sort of neglected, even though I do think it's a little bit more complicated than he said. I do think that by the 90s, they were kind of not interested in doing it and had to do it a little bit. And if, as you were saying earlier, if they didn't have to do it, they would do it much more infrequently the way they do now, because they no longer have to do remixes. And so they only do one every couple of years when I guess something speaks to them or they have some actual interest in it. But the one part of Wendell's email that I kind of disagree with is this idea that you need to know the original first and that you should sort of encounter Ottaker remixes in the wild. That is just not how remixing works, in my opinion. Like, remixing is meant to be kind of a crossover thing. Like, the same way podcasts have a guest, you know, on their podcast, the idea is that fans of both podcasts will then mm-hmm. kind of pool together and you'll both get new fans from each other. This is exactly how remixing was supposed to work. There is nobody in the world who has a music taste that they are hearing like all this obscure shit that Ottaker, you know, is remixing, but have never heard Ottaker. Like, we talked about all the weird stuff on that last episode, like this weird French Smashing Pumpkins ripoff, like strange, you know, industrial pop, like late 80s industrial pop, Merzbow. Like, nobody listens to all this shit and then just like slowly, naturally gravitates towards Ottaker remixes. It is generally going to go the opposite way. You are going to be a fan of Ottaker, and through that, the idea is that you would discover all these other acts. You know what I mean? The same way that any of these acts hope to grab a couple Ottaker fans. So I just think, like, yes, when it comes to Tortoise and Stereolab, like, they're fantastic. We all know them before we hear Ottaker's remix. But for almost everybody else, this is not the case for anybody. Everybody is going to hear Ottaker's remix first. You know what I mean?
Especially today. I mean, you know, when Ottaker is way bigger than all these people, you know, like, maybe, okay, in the one of the songs we're talking about today, you know, came out in 1989, you know, the original. Like, okay, yeah, maybe in 1990 you heard the original first and then the remix because you had never heard of Ottaker or something.
But
I think today, definitely, you know, you come to it backwards. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in my life listening to obscure music for no reason other than to find music I've never heard before. And I've not heard of most of these artists, you know. I don't claim that I know everything, but I...
Some of this is pretty obscure.
Yeah, I know a lot. And I've not heard of much of it.
So I think there's that rare occasion, which is kind of exciting, where you know, like with Tortoise and with Stereolab,
personally, exactly.
Like I know them first, and then I heard Ottaker's remix, but that's like really a rare occurrence. For the most part, I'm an Ottaker fan who is then hopefully going to discover, you know, hopefully on the other artist's idea, I will discover other artists through Ottaker's remix. I mean, that's the whole point. That's why they asked Ottaker to remix it, so Ottaker fans would discover their music.
Exactly.
But were we wrong, though, to kind of imply that Ottaker don't care much for any of the material they're remixing?
I mean, maybe we were a little flippant with that, you know, because of course we don't know, you know, how they thought about everything. You know, you pulled, you know, quotes whenever they had talked about it. But one, just because they say something nice in a quote, you know, like if one of my friends came to me and was like, oh, you know, remix my song, and I kind of thought that song sucked, I wouldn't say in an interview, like, oh, yeah, I hate that song. It's just my friend. He made me do it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I would be like, oh, yeah, you know, I'd make something up. And sure, you know, maybe I'm putting that into their mouth and stuff. But I'm just saying that, like, that's possible. And then, you know, we had quotes where they, didn't seem to care about it. And I just think the biggest clue is how much it stops happening. You know, like in the past, in the past, you know, 10 years, they've done just a handful, and they seem to be of people, you know, they do respect, like Sophie. I mean, even like, I mean, Wendell had a good point in his email about, like, you know, they don't change that Earth song basically at all because they like the material so much. And like, okay, yeah, I'm sure that that happens, you know, and that's not a surprise. But I think, you know, things like Skinny Puppy, you know, they probably didn't like, and that's why they could mutilate it.
I guess, like, and I feel like I was trying to be clear about this in the last episode, but it's like, they might like some of the stuff, they might dislike some of the stuff, but their approach to remixing seems to start with indifference. Like, I rarely hear any evidence that they are, like, trying to pull something out of the song that will, like, it, you know, make you listen to the original in a new light. Like, they are almost always doing just their own thing. Like, maybe they zero in on some sound they think is kind of cool, but I don't ever feel like what Wendell has said here, that they are, like, pushing a song farther than the original artist could. I feel like they are often isolating one little component of the song and building an Autechre song around it.
No, I completely agree. It never feels like they, you know, were riding along in the car, heard a song come on the radio, and were like, oh, we got to remix that. Like that, you know, I got this great idea. It never, you're right. It always does sort of seem like they, you know, they kind of pick one thing that they like about it or something, and then they make an Autechre song using the sound palette that happened to come from another song. You know, of course, there's when they have this many remixes, there's certainly, you know, exemptions to that, you know, rule. But I think that is the overwhelming, you know, sort of feel I get from this whole, you know, the Laxier collection that we've kind of been going through.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I mean, I definitely 100% appreciate Wendell's email. I think his first point about the origins of remixing is, like, really important and good one. I think I disagree a little bit with the, you know, approach, but I can also agree with the idea that they may not be as special to us because we, like, listen to all of them in this huge marathon session. It may be more rewarding to just sort of discover one here and there, add it to your personal playlist or whatever. You know, and I am almost sure that that's a better way to do this, because it does kind of end up becoming kind of incoherent and yet simultaneously, like, very samey all the way through. But
yeah, I mean, I think we said that in the last episode like, when once we decided on our each individual's 10, you know, list of 10, I enjoyed, like, those lists of 10 so much more than the, you know, entire collection, because it becomes very samey, especially, like, literally just listening to them in chronological order, you know, and there's no thought put to it. It does get samey. It's not the intended way to listen to it. You know, and I wish there would have been a easier way to kind of work them in. And, you know, people like Wendell have been emailing us since the beginning. And, I mean, honestly, we've even sort of, like, discussed it and stuff, like, how to fit these in, because we didn't want to bog down in the middle of, you know, because so many of them are front loaded, you know, getting the episode going. You know, people want to hear about Incunabula and Chiastic Slide, LP5. You know, there's a certain, and us too, you know, we're sort of eager to get to that kind of stuff. You don't want to make a whole episode on, you know, Iconoclasm.
Yeah, it is true that also we are, as Wendell notes, like, our personal taste is skewed towards album, statement stuff. And Autechre is, you know, is so into making these big statements with every album that's part of the reason I think why we like them so freaking much. But I do appreciate when people write in to disagree with us. I love that. I think it spurs good conversation. And this was a good excuse to, you know, review some of that background stuff that we talked about last time. But on that note, I think we can sort of move in to our listeners' 10 favorite AE remixes. And I should mention that they aren't in order of favoriteness or anything like that. We didn't try to do that. I just sorted them by release date. So what is the first of our listeners' 10 favorite AE remixes, Dan?
Yeah, up first is Iconoclasm Don't X-Ray Da Dat Mix, which is the best title for any of these remixes. But the rundown on it, it's a remix of Iconoclasm from Buck Tick's 1989 LP LP Taboo. Apparently, their name is actually pronounced Baku Chiku, but I feel like it would be kind of confusing for listeners if we don't just pronounce it the way it's spelled for English. Yeah. But Autechre's version was released on a 1994 remix album called Shapeless.
Yeah, you know, this one is very, very interesting, very notable, I think, because, well, first off, I should actually jump ahead and read an important Autechre comment. I mentioned before, we always tried to like look for some, you know, some moment where they mentioned the remix. And in this case, it's a kind of a big one, because in the 2013 Ask Autechre Anything, they were asked to pick their favorite remix. And Sean replied, "For me, it's probably the Bucktick remix, an enduring favorite." Sadly, Rob did not respond. But okay, so apparently, at least in 2013, this was Sean's favorite remix. And it's a weird one because it's remixing like a very post-punk kind of a track, right? Like a Japanese kind of goth rock post-punk almost track. It's like, it's got this kind of like electro bass line that, you know, maybe is tied a little bit to the industrial pop kind of realm, but it's, you know, just covered with these like razor thin, like very discordant guitars, which I think is just a staple of post-punk. And yet what they do with it, of course, there's also like this kind of spoken, like deep vocal, like kind of a Nick Cave spoken thing going on. But what they do with it is like turned into a pretty smooth, like chill out track in a weird way, right? Like there's these kind of, I mean, there's like a very crunchy kind of sampled beat. There's like these crushed, like bit crushed snare rolls and stuff, and like a very deep kick. But on top of that is like this kind of glowing, I don't know, harmonium chord, or and like these kind of wispy, bendy synth leads. And the whole thing just feels like those kind of swelling, glowing chords just feel like breathing, like stillness and meditation over what is a pretty aggressive, like bit crushed thing. And there's lots of like weird low bitrate noises just swirling all around your head. But I love the kind of stillness in contrast with all that like clatter, you know?
Yeah. This is a really cool song. I enjoy the remix a lot. I think glowing is a good word. It's sort of like, because it's so like, you know, meditative or whatever, like that chord, like even does just sort of sound like electronic equipment that's like left on, you know, how you get that like, ground hum kind of noise.
Yeah,
like it stretches the line between being a chord and being, you know, hum. So great. Yeah. And this one actually, you know, I had never heard of this group or anything before. And I actually kind of dug the original.
Really?
Yeah, it was kind of cool. I mean, it's like a little corny, but I got a soft spot for like corny 80s post-punk things. I haven't listened to the whole album yet, but I saved it on the Spotify. So what we were saying, you know, in response to Wendell's email, like it does sort of work, you know, like look at this, you know, 20, almost 30 years later, they've got a new listen on Spotify because of
it. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it does work. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't that into the original track, and I think it just sounded, I mean, it's from 1989, and it just sounds like, you know, it could have been a Public Image Limited track from 1979.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels like very standard kind of post-punk to me. But on that note, I wanted to read this slightly long comment on this track from listener Joe, who says, "I'm probably just not cool enough, but I had never heard of Bucktick or Baku Chiku before. They sound almost like some kind of 80s punk version of Rammstein. Before listening, I had absolutely no idea what in the world an AE remix of this would sound like, and I was psyched to hear them do a completely different non-electronic genre. My first impression was that this was pretty much the Garbage, Anvil Vapor, Tri-Repete style a year early. I have to imagine that they use this track as a way to experiment with the style that would eventually become fully formed and completed. This makes me think that I might have completely underrated the influence that their remix work has had on the development of their overall sound. If Autechre really means audio technology research or even audio architecture, is their remix work an integral and underrated part of that process? You guys have discussed how on albums like XI, they deconstruct a genre like early hip-hop, Detroit techno, and synthesize it into something new. That's literally what they're doing on their remixes. They've completely deconstructed this Japanese punk rock track and synthesized it into something that sounds like what would end up being Tri-Repete. And I don't think that they just lazily made a Tri-Rep style track and then threw in a few elements of that song. This was released in August 1994, 6 months before even Garbage. Sean apparently once claimed this was his favorite remix. Does Tri-Repete have strands of punk rock incorporated into its DNA?" I mean, I thought this was a fascinating comment because You're right. This is quite early. And what's so striking to me, and I was looking for like, what the hell did they take from the original song? Because it just seems like such a different vibe.
Yeah.
But there is a kind of like dryness to the production here, which is very like not Amber era to me, which is very Tri-Repete actually to me, like such dry, like almost no reverb on anything, dryness, like real crispness. You can just hear the empty space around every single instrument. And I just sort of started to wonder, like, about Joe's comment here, like maybe they didn't literally do so much with the original sounds. Maybe some of that like harsh clatter is from the, you know, the guitar, the like shredded razor thin guitars of the original track, but maybe they just kind of took the dryness of post-punk. You know, post-punk has like no reverb right? Nothing lush or gentle sounding. And they just kind of took that like mixing approach to what is essentially an Amber track and like kind of invented Tri-Repete. Does that make any sense?
You know, I think it's sort of a, you know, which came first situation, you know, were they just already in this Tri-Repete mindset, you know, that they, you know, were they working towards Tri-Repete on its own? And does do these like remixes become, you know, sort of an exercise in that? Or is it, you know, in remixing this song or other songs, they found something they liked? And it probably doesn't have to necessarily be one or the other. You know, it could be a combination, because I definitely hear it, you know, it has that, you know, starkness, that that kind of, you know, reverbless feeling of Tri-Repete. But you know, maybe also that's why they pick a post-punk sort of track, because, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they've found some inspiration from, you know, late 70s, early 80s post-punk, or even, I mean, you know, this newer thing, you know, like Buck Tick here.
Yeah, I mean, somewhere like in the complicated musical family tree, like post-punk and electronic are related.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
of
like,
course.
Definitely,
I mean, they both come, from dub. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that like what some of what post-punk is sometimes trying to do with the guitars is just to make like glitch. Like they just didn't have a way of making digital glitching like Autechre did later on. But like,
yeah.
It's not music, you know. It's just like glitchy sounds and like really harsh, like. And that kind of stuff is just all over the kind of mid-90s Autechre for sure. So there's something there. But we'll move on to the next of our listeners' favorite remixes. It's called On the Loose for Internal Use Only Mix. It's a remix of On the Loose from Slowly's 1994 LP Ming. And it was released on a 1995 remix EP, either called Remix EP or The Remix Project. It looks like it was released on both for two different labels. Not sure at all what the deal is with that, but what do you think about this one?
Yeah, this one's okay. You know, it's got like the real bit crushed thing going on again. You know, like the snare is just like almost unrecognizable as a snare. You got, you know, those nice sort of like chord progression thing going on. It feels a little by the numbers. I think, you know, it just sort of feels like an early Autechre, you know, electronic kind of thing. But I mean, you know, it's a nice song. I think it's a good, it would be a good introduction if you, you know, were a fan of this original band and, you know, somehow found it, you know, found this remix from here. What did you think about the original? Did you listen to the original at all?
Yeah, the original is kind of crazy because it's like one of these kind of jazz infused trip hop things. And it's, you know, it's got like these kind of like sampled real sounding jazz drums, all kind of formed into like a pretty killer hip hop beat. And then like absolutely mad flute and vibes, like leads all over the place, like this kind of slick electric bass line. And you can even get some like little guitar, like jazz guitar soloing and some horns. It's almost like every trip hop trope is present on this track in some way. Really dense and kind of in a fun way, but like what they do with it is they're almost like quite respectful to it, but they sort of slow it down and they add this like super sub bass. And then, yeah, those like snares that are just like bit crushed clacks, like covered in echo to the point where it starts to become like noise. Like there's just so much, it's like not a snare as you mentioned. And it just makes this kind of like, I don't know, trippy feeling where there's so much echo on so much of this track, and it just sounds like in slow motion, and yet there's this really crisp hi-hat just kind of like, you know, carrying you through.
Yeah.
And that sub is like just so like big and heavy. It just seems to like hold the whole thing together. So it's just kind of weird because it sounds like, okay, I'm almost listening to the original track in slow motion, and yet that hi-hat reminds you that no, this is like this is the tempo it's supposed to be. Like that sounds right. And it just creates like this cool kind of like trippy, disorienting feeling, like playing with time stretching as they were doing a lot on Amber, I think. And yet I kind of wrote down in my notes, like it's so dirty that it sounds kind of like Chiastic a couple years early. The B is very standard hip hop, which reminds me of like Incunabula a little bit. And then it's doing so much playing with time stretching that it reminds me of Amber. So it's like this weird little microcosm of mid-90s Autechre to me.
Yeah. That's why I think it's a good introduction to Autechre. But with that original song, like I kind of felt the same way, you know, you listen to it. It was like, you know, trip hop trope 101, but it, you know, it's a decent enough song. But then you listen to the Autechre one and I just think it's like, oh yeah, that's what people would like, really good talent, you know, like could really edit it down and like take it and make so much better of a track to it, you know, that sub bass is like so great on there.
Yeah, this might be one of the cases of what Wendell was actually saying, is that it does kind of just push the original into like more interesting territory. It's not
like just a total disregard.
But all right, we can. I wanted to mention that we didn't get any actual comments, just like some shout outs on this one. But listener Darren did put it at number 5 on his personal top 10 list. So no comments to discuss. I guess we can just move on.
Yeah. Up next, we got Falling, Autechre FR13 mix. It's a remix of Falling from Scorn's 1994 LP Evanescence, released on a 1995 remix album called Ellipsis. And what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's. It's quite an interesting track. I think that like Scorn is supposed to be, I don't know, it feels like a blind spot because we got like quite a lot of Autechre comments, quite a lot of listener comments on this. Seems like I should check out Scorn. Like I've missed something not checking this out, but it's pretty weird because it's like the former drummer of Napalm Death, and then he sort of created this electronic project. But the track is kind of cool. It's got like this very, like just an onslaught of kind of live drums and hand percussion like sampled, and it turns into like this very jungly voodoo groove. There's some very spooky strings and vocal samples, and it's like the drums are a little too crazy to rap over, but if they were toned down a little bit, like this could be a Dr. Octagon beat. Like it's that kind of horrorcore like spookiness, like in an almost tongue-in-cheek way that I think would really serve Dr. Octagon well. But here you know, they kind of turn it into like a very garbage-esque beat, I think, with like these kind of short noise blasts, like little clips of static and stuff, and add what must be like kind of a pitched up, twisted one, like one of the drums from the original Scorn track, but it ends up sounding like this kind of glitched out kalimba or something, like kind of a bouncy sound. I mean, what I like about it is that it ends up just being like this very long. I mean, how long is this freaking track? It's like
10 minutes.
Yeah. So, very long melodyless drum workout, like lots of different drum patterns. And my favorite bit of it is like this kind of like rapid fire low glitch that joins at a certain point, eventually kind of takes the lead on the track, which to me is just so Pansonic sounding. Like I love it. Like Pansonic would never make something so songy. They would like make just the entire track just that sound, but it's really cool here. And I also like the kind of just, they're just some like atonal drone notes that have like almost nothing to do with the song, but maybe like capture some of the spookiness of the original. It just becomes like a very cool, like if Autechre tried to do what Scorn did on the original in a way.
Yeah, this one is really cool. It's like so different, I think, than like, you know, the last two we've talked about and stuff. It's crazy, like with the just, it's essentially just a drum workout, like you said, which is, you know, it's so interesting to use like those drums and tune them in a way where it sounds like a, you know, a melody instrument, like the kalimba or whatever, you know, it's, I don't know. I'm trying to think of what to add to what you said, but this one I think is maybe my favorite of the 10 we've got here today. Yeah, it's really great. I think it serves it super well for it to go on so long too. You know, like you said, it's 10 minutes. Yeah. It gets to that like almost hypnotic kind of groove thing where you could feel like it's going on too long, but if you're into it, you can just ride it out.
Yeah, I wrote down the word hypnotic as well, and I think it's just it sort of captures like a similar magic of the original track in that there are just so many different drum patterns that you want to spend 10 minutes in it because you can sort of like focus in on one and the other
just
out of playing
around
with each other. Yeah, but in this case, instead of like mostly live drum sounds, it's like lots of interesting glitches, like lots of cool sound design in this drum workout. Now, we do have some Autechre comments to read. In the 2013 Ask Autechre Anything, Sean was asked, did the both of you choose to remix the Falling track, or did Mick Harris, this is the creative mind behind Scorn, choose it for you? Sean replied, can't remember. I think Mick chose it. He was also asked what his favorite Scorn album was, and he replied, Xander, probably, because it was the first one where he nailed the kind of hip-hop I like. Lastly, somebody asked if Rex On from XI is a Scorn homage, and he said, nah, Rex On is an 80s hip-hop homage. That emu snare is on loads of hip-hop records, and the booming 808, etc. More of a shout-out to Meepy Manifesto, Renegade Soundwave, Keith LeBlanc, Duke Booty, etc., but I can see why someone who doesn't really listen to 80s hip-hop but listens to Scorn might think that. Feels like a little dig on that poor listener. We also got a lot of listener comments. You want to read the first one?
Yeah, listener Wendell recommended this one back when we first started the podcast and wrote, this remix sounds very much in that space between Amber and Try Repetate and Timber and Mood. With that low-pitched fluttering percussion starts to have a tone emerge, and it's somewhere around 5 minutes in, so heavy. Big Scorn fan as well. One of the Birmingham, England bands from the 1990s that I'm so into alongside Godflesh and Maine.
And then we heard from listener Joe as well, who said the original version of Falling by Scorn sounded like a pretty typical ambientish, popish, jungleish, industrialist, technoish track from that era that you could imagine a snippet of in some mid-90s B-action movie that ponied up for Kurt Russell to phone it in. The Autechre remix is a heck of a lot more interesting. Most of it sounds like a lot like Autechre from this era, the Amber to Try Rep phase, but I especially love that pattern pattering sound. It sounds like a bunch of CDs skipping in some kind of controlled harmony with one another in the final third of the song. I think that's that low glitch that I also really love. Joe continues, I love the way they use space here. There's so much going on, but everything sounds so clear and distinct and not at all muddled. Nothing is random or unnecessary. They really have been masters of sound design since the start. And then listener Steve called this one of his favorites. And listener Darren named it his fourth favorite remix. I should also mention that a bunch of people wrote in for our XI episode to say that Rexon reminded them of Scorn. But do you have any thoughts about any of these plentiful listener comments on this one?
The CD skipping thing that Joe brought up, that glitch thing does kind of sound, almost like a little oval thing. I didn't catch that. I like that analogy, if you will.
Well, I think we can move on to the next one, which is called Sexy Bits, Autechre AE9V, 9-volt mix. This one is a little confusing background-wise. The original artist here is DJ Food, and this remix came out on a 1996 remix album called Refried Food. Many of the albums in DJ Food's early 90s series Jazz Breaks have a track called Sexy Bits, but I'm not sure which one or ones this is remixing, and I can't even find most of them to check. The vinyl version of Refried Food notes that most of the contributions remix tracks from Jazz Breaks Volume 5, but it doesn't specify for Autechre's track and just says additional production and remix by Autechre. Now, I did find one of the originals. I think you can kind of tell that it's almost just like unused samples from the project. Like it's just like a bunch, like a, minute to 2 minute, like sound bank of just like a couple cool drum breaks, like some claps, some chimes, just various cool sounds that maybe he didn't get around to using, So what do you think of this one? Does it feel like Autechre just basically did the thing that DJ Food wanted people to do? I guess he was just like, hey, here's some cool samples I found that I didn't get around to using, and Autechre just made a track out of them.
Yeah, this one sounds exactly like that. It kind of feels like sort of one of those early 90s, late 80s kind of exercises in that, just like a little crate digging, like a Avalanches or DJ Shadow kind of thing, where it, like this song, like the Ottica remix, it sounds like samples in the sense where like I think like Ottica never really sounds like that, you know. We always even complain, you know, like Marhide or something when there's like a noise that we recognize in there. And this one like really does sort of, I could see this one being fun for the lads, you know, like because it probably is like the, you know, thing they used to do when they were younger and stuff. But it leaves a little bit to be desired in that sense, because it feels like a little amateur for something from Ottica, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just like doing the thing that I guess this track is for, as I said, and I mean doing a nice job with it. I do find it a little bit ordinary, but I mean what's weird about it is like this is probably overthinking it, but it's like kind of calling attention to itself as sampling by sampling kind of poorly, like the gain is like way too high on a lot of the samples, which like kind of adds this like very high harsh static, like it sounds like a Guided by Voices song at points or something. And it's just like, it just sounds like, yeah, like sampled wrong, like with way too much gain on the thing. And yet, you know, despite that, it ends up being like a pretty standard kind of just sick drum break with like kind of some cool little flute licks, keyboard stabs, all the stuff that you would expect to hear on the Sexy Bits track. I mean, what kind of saves it for me is that toward the end, you get this kind of like low string pad thing, like this kind of one of those magical three note Ottica melodies. It's just so simple, but like very transfixing. And it's, I wish it was just there like the whole track, because it just sounds kind of ordinary. And then when that joins in, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, this is Ottica, right? And like before, it almost could have been anybody. But there's something about just that light touch that kind of ties it together, but it comes so late and, you know, it just doesn't last too long.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like jamming with samples, you know, loaded up into the sampler or something, and then like, yeah, arriving at that, but at that point, you know, we're 7 minutes in or whatever it is. Yeah, I could see that, and I agree.
Well, listener Wendell shouted this one out and wrote, I don't know the original track of this remix. It's a repetitive one, but it's fun for some minimal instrumental hip-hop head nod. And listener Darren named it his third favorite Ottica remix ever. So Wendell sounds like a little divided, but you know, definitely some people who love it. I think we could just move on. What's next?
Yeah, up next we get String of Pearls, Ottica Mix, a remix of String of Pearls from Space Time Continuum's 1996 LP Emit Ecaps, released on a 1996 remix compilation called Remit Recaps. So what do you think of this one?
Yeah, this is where I think it gets good for me. Like, we put it in sort of chronological order, just these 10 that we picked out. And it's like, here's where I really start to dig it, honestly. Like those first couple are good to you know, okay. But this is kind of awesome. The original track, it has like a very, you know, like these kind of like new age chimes, you know, running. It sounds very much like the kind of Japanese environmental music that's become kind of popular now because of those like reissues from, I think, Light in the Attic. Is that the label? They've done like a bunch of these... bunch of these reissues of this kind of 80s and 90s like Japanese environmental music. It sounds very much like that, very new agey, you know, kind of just a nice array of echoing chiming patterns and stuff. Eventually like kind of a beat comes in, but it ends up sounding like kind of Global Communications to me. But Ottica like does some wild shit with this one, where they put this like huge crunchy kick, a snare with like this kind of, you know, digitized like metallic ringing on it. Mm-hmm. And then the kind of, you know, just array of chimes from the original, it kind of becomes like this like tangled web of melody. Like, honestly, I started to feel like, and this might be overthinking it, but this has like real Max MSP energy to me. Like, it's way too early. It's 1996. And yet just the way that this, like what was a very pretty cascading melody has become like this tangled web of like a mess of loops, like just kind of spinning like a ball in the middle. is like very, it just feels like very living and like this thing that could like unravel at any moment. The beat is pretty straight. It's kind of cool sounding, but pretty straight. But you can kind of imagine this track appearing on like a, you know, mid-2000s, maybe even like XI track, where, but the beat would be like a little bit more fluid, like a little bit more uneven, like everything wasn't locking directly into place. And then you would kind of keep this tangled web of melodies, and it would be like a pretty badass Autechre track.
Yeah, it's sort of a bridge between like early and late Autechre because of that. Because yeah, like you've got this central, you know, groove, the like you know, that's like holding you down basically the whole song. But then you're like floating inside of this web of mixing and all these weird chime noises and just things being thrown at you from any which sort of way. I agree. You know, if it was just a straight, you know, XI or later kind of track, that rhythm would also maybe, you know, change a little bit, be more wacky for lack of a better word. Yeah. Whereas here, I mean, it's a pretty like straight hip hop beat. But really, I think that's what kind of makes this track pretty cool. You know, you can kind of have this one on in the background, I think, and just, you know, ride that beat. You know, you catch that melody a little bit and stuff. But it also, I think, rewards close listening too. Back to that artificial intelligence thing, because of that, you know, like just exploring that web is also pretty fun.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in there that really does reward that kind of like zooming in listening. And I just don't even know how to describe it. Like, you know, listen to this track, String of Pearls, and just tell me that you can't hear what it would sound like on XI, because it's like I can hear it, even though it's not that, but it's just incredible. This is 1996, and it just seems like really this cool window on stuff that they would end up doing much, much later. This is another one we got no actual comments, just shout outs. But again, I wanted to mention that listener Darren put this at number 8 on his personal top 10 list. I think we can move on to another big one, Refractions in the Plastic Pulse Phoebe 8 mix. It's a remix of Refractions in the Plastic Pulse, the 17-minute centerpiece of Stereolab's 1997 album Dots and Loops. It was released as the A-side of a 1998 remix single just called Refractions in the Plastic Pulse. What do you think about this one?
Well, first, I'll preface it and say I'm not a huge Stereolab fan.
It's a damn shame.
I know, because I know you are. And you know, I've tried. I like Dots and Loops. I like a couple other records. I don't hate them. I just never get super super into it. So you know, we'll come in with that. What I think Autechre have done here is, I think I'm gonna get crucified because I think everybody likes this one, but I kind of don't. They sort of just turned this into a Black Moth Super Rainbow song. Like they like basically make the vocals like sound like they're through a vocoder, and this has got to be one of the only times that Autechre's like made something shorter too. You know, like they like half the song. I don't know. I don't love the original song, but I just don't think that this is it's interesting in the way to see like you know, what Autechre can do with a different genre. I don't think it's like entirely successful. I think they sort of just make a, you know, an indie rock track, trip hop-ish, and they make it like a little bit weirder, you know, like throwing the vocoder, changing the vocals and stuff. But I don't think it's entirely successful. But I am really curious what you think, because I do know that, you know, you like Stereolab a lot.
Yeah, I mean, well, I strongly disagree with you on everything.
That's kind of what I assumed.
I mean, the original is kind of a masterpiece, in my opinion. And we don't have to get into the Stereolab debate, but it's kind of like this 17 and a half minute, actually, like medley almost, like in the kind of classic krautrock style that Stereolab does. And this part that they end up kind of focusing on is like a weird part to zoom in on, because it's kind of this uphill chug part of the song that almost like serves as a bridge, because kind of before and after this you get these kind of like those classic Stereolab like swinging 60s kind of crescendos of like just brilliant melodies, and this is kind of like a build up or something. And they zoom in on it, and I think they do something like insane with it, which I love. It's like they take out the chug and kind of replace it with just like a tambourine. And then they, you know, and they have these kind of rippling, like lots of tremolo on these kind of guitar plucks. So there's that pulse is still there, but it's not like chugging in the same way. Of course, as you mentioned, they like digitize and chipmunk the shit out of the vocals in like a very strange way. Then this huge like shuffling onslaught of percussion joins and just gets madder and madder as the track goes on. It sounds very much like, and again, this is early, right? This is 1998. And it sounds like Draft to me, or like ISSSA, that the companion Gescom piece to Draft. Like insane how like tangled and destroyed this like percussive loop is. Like it's like threatening to spin out of control.
Yeah.
Over this is weirdly clean backing vocals, like that I almost didn't even notice from the original track, which is really strange when the lead vocal is so destroyed. And then that lead vocal gets so destroyed that it turns into like whispered screaming, and everything just gets like that percussion like turns into like, it gets so crazy it turns into like this weird rubber band sound, and you just have like what sounds like white noise, but when you listen in it is like the Exorcist screaming into your ears while also whispering. I think this is like madness in the best way possible.
See, I get what you're saying with all that, and I see it all. I just sort of feel differently about each of those pieces. You know, that percussion, it does get like wild and stuff, and that's cool. You know, I agree with your Draft, you know, comparison. I just think that it's the like source material, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's just like it's not the drum sounds I think that Autechre would maybe use on Draft or anything, and it gets so like big and loud, it almost turns into like metal sounding drums, and it's just, it's not the sounds I want to be hearing if I'm being honest when I'm listening to Autechre.
Yeah,
I don't know, and even though those vocals, you know, how they say, how they change, I don't know, it like almost by the end of it, I feel like I'm listening to, you know, Mayhem or something. Like it almost becomes like a metal song, and I'm not here for that.
I don't know. I just kind of love it, and I kind of like, I love the original. Like I said, I would never have thought to like zoom in on this particular part.
That is impressive, but, you know. I joked about them changing the length of the song, that is impressive to like not focus. You know, either taking the entire song, which is, I feel like, the simple thing, like that's what I would do if someone made me remix something, but just to like zero in on this like transitory, you know, section of a song is very impressive.
Yeah, and to like change what it is fundamentally, and yet for some reason, like, you know, because I listen to Stereolab pretty often, I feel like I had not listened to this very much at all before we started preparing for this remix thing. I feel like I'll just never hear the original the same in a weird way because of like what fucking evil they pulled out of it in some strange way. You know, I also feel like, I don't know, this might be bullshit, and I kind of wonder what you think, but it's like I sometimes worry that I was impressed, and this shouldn't matter, but I was like impressed when there was a remix, like listener Joe mentioned it up at the top, really, a remix that was really ahead of its time. You know, like when I heard, like, 'cause I hear this and I'm like, wow, this sounds like a couple years early in Autechre's development. And yet, if the release date was like 2003, maybe I wouldn't be as impressed. Like that, you know, get what I'm saying? Like maybe I shouldn't factor that in.
No, I agree. I get what you're saying, and I think that's a natural thing to do. I mean, with all art, you know, the reason an artist's early work is interesting is to try to see, you know, when they become a master in it, you know. And so I think that's a fair statement. And you know, it's a fair statement to, oh, if this just came out later, it would be less impressive, because, you know, same thing with plenty of artwork and everything. So, I see no problem with that.
Yeah. And I also kind of wanted to mention to a point that you were bringing up, you know, I'm gushing over this, and so you might be wondering, like, well, why didn't I make my original list? And there's something about the remixes, especially when you're listening to them in this huge marathon, where I would say like 95% of them, for some reason, can be categorized in like the chill
realm,
you know, like they're often quite chill for some reason. And I found myself, you know, I mentioned last episode, I liked throwing on the Lexia remix compilation and just like listening to them because they went in the background. And I often found myself annoyed by tracks like this that were like suddenly and very intrusively like noisy and chaotic. And so I think I ended up not picking them, even though like in isolation, I really, really like them. So maybe this should have been on my list is what I'm saying.
Okay. I mean, I think that really, you know, speaks to what we talked about with Windows Email, though, is like the way we're listening to these is not the way they're intended, because I completely agree with you. I mean, I don't particularly love this one even on its own, but yeah, when I was listening to the entire mix, you know, the entire compilation, you know, things like this that were very different did stick out more, and like in a negative way, because it would, you know, sort of take you out of the moment. But you know, that's no fault of the artist, really. You know, they didn't intend for it to be consumed in that way.
Yeah, well, there are some Autechre comments for this one. In the 2013 Ask Autechre Anything, the guys were asked, the Stereolab remix is awesome. How did it come about? Are you fans of theirs, or did they approach you, or what? Sean replied, they approached us, we're fans. I like how he doesn't clarify we are fans or they are fans.
Yeah.
Like, there's something like very ambiguous about that. We're fans. I used to like their energy, the way there would just be people on a stage all staring at the floor, just concentrating on the sound. I really get that. I can't wait till he discovers My Bloody Valentine. Rob added, they asked us, I think they liked our tracks and wanted a version, was good fun to make, and we managed to bang a few offcuts from their real drummer and her singing, which I still really rate. I'm not sure what he means by that, like they brought in some unused sounds, or if they actually got them to record some new sounds, but...
I mean, email if I'm wrong, but I think offcuts means like not on the cut, which... the record, like I think it's like additional percussion, like not from it, but if someone knows,
we managed to bang them, whatever the hell that means. I guess just use them, but
I hope so.
But yeah, I don't know. And we got a bunch of listener comments on this, again, very popular one. You want to read those?
Yeah. Listener Eric says, a masterpiece of vocal processing. The voice is mangled in such a beautiful and haunting way. And that beat, so propulsive, so full of energy, an incredible track that I've listened to countless times, never gets old. Listener Tom named it his favorite AE remix and wrote, I only recently listened to the original, and actually they don't do much with it beyond adding vocal distortion and some beats. But what beats? Surely among the most fucked up and noisy in their catalog, keeping this at the top spot, even if Stereolab deserve joint credit for it. Then listener Wendell goes on to say, I have trouble being objective about this one since I'm huge into Stereolab as well as Autechre, and find this remix such a treat. Signature AE breakbeat vocals through a ring mod amplitude modulation effect. As it progresses, the vocals get so chilling and sinister. Stereolab have never sounded so unsettling.
I agree 100% with all those, especially listener Tom with like that beat, like among the most fucked up and noisy in their catalog. I like totally agree with that, but I better stop gushing. We better move on. What's next?
Yeah, up next we've got Adverse Camber, a remix of 10 Day Interval from Tortoise's 1998 album TNT, though it's sometimes referred to as a collaboration instead of a remix, released alongside another AE remix of the same track on a single called Adverse Camber, Today Retrieval. So what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I guess we're kind of just going to have to talk about both remixes in a way, because they remix the same track. I mean, the original is really beautiful off of a classic album, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a marimba piece with very like Steve Reich or like kind of tubular bells kind of a feel, like minimalism composition. Nice like mixture of like, you know, the bouncing percussive notes and then really ringing out sustained, you know, bell type sounds. And then as it goes on, like a really lovely kind of bass and like some guitar licks, and then of course that like almost iconic descending piano line. When it comes to Adverse Camber, it's quite weird because it doesn't, I don't know what the hell to make of this, right? There's a mystery to this track in that people do often refer to it as a collaboration. In fact, in the 2013 Ask Autechre Anything, Sean was asked how this collab came about, And he replied, "We knew Tortoise already, mutual fans." Didn't correct him about it being a collab, so who the hell knows? But what's weird about this is it's kind of like scrambling, the adverse camber one, is kind of scrambling the original piece, like putting an like extra springiness on everything and like maybe even skipping steps in the pattern. It makes everything sound quite jittery. And then adding to that jitteriness is, this is like a mind trick and a half. It's like, I started to think, okay, they're adding like all this springiness to everything to where the bass is sounding kind of like a slap bass. But then there are points where like, there is definitely a new slap bass on this. Like nobody can talk me out of it. Somebody recorded slap bass. And I, for some reason, doubt the Odd-Tekker know how to play slap bass. So it makes me wonder if Tortoise didn't record new bass, but you know, it gives you that kind of like, what's that first track on the Talking Heads album, Born Under Punches. You know how like the bass is sped up and it's like that slap bass is sped up and it just sounds so jittery and like frantic and anxiety inducing. It gives me that kind of same feeling. Like, what do you make of this one?
Yeah, I always like, because I actually own this one. I found it at a record store one time. And, I this is like the first AE remix I probably ever heard. But I like, you know, read more about it when I bought it and stuff. And you know, and I saw people mentioning the collab thing and stuff too. And I don't know if that's just like a, you know, sort of like a rockist view of it. Because people, because if you notice, people sort of said the collab thing and the Stereo Lab one too. It's like, do people just think like, because these are instruments, like, you know, regular quote unquote instruments, you know, played, like using those recordings makes it a collab? Like, I wonder, and I could see like Sean not correcting someone because you know, whatever, but I do wonder, like, is it, you know, did they bang some off cuts for this one too, or
there's a new slap bass, like there's something going on with that.
I definitely think so, and I agree. I it doesn't sound synthetic, so I, because I mean, did we read one time where in that Odd-Tekker anything where someone asked like Sean Rob if they played like real instruments, and he said something snarky about like, what, like the guitar, like, you know, no thanks kind of thing. So I agree. I doubt that either of them knows how to play slap bass. I think there probably were some and the artwork on it, like it's the like Tortoise guy and stuff, you know, like each side, like one side sort of like looks like it's a Tortoise record and one side sort of like seems like it's an Odd-Tekker thing, you know, more than a, I guess also they probably have similar fan base, so it's a good thing to put, you know, both names on it.
It's just like the way it's presented feels more like a collaboration than a remix. But you know, there's something really interesting about this. I should say that like I kind of love it. I think that I love that jitteriness, and yet I also love how by sort of skipping steps in the pattern and kind of making it like a little more disjointed, it has this kind of like fractured beauty that I really like about Sickly Sweet in particular. Like it sound like you can tell it was once, even if you didn't know the Tortoise track, like it was once a very pretty piece that's now been like smashed like a, and like tried to piece it back together or something. Now the other one, Today Retrieval, is somehow weirder in that it is kind of like pure play with time stretching. Actually, The first track here, Adverse Camber, it ends with like what just sounds like knob twiddling on a delay pedal. And then this almost is like an entire track of that idea. And it's basically like doing the, you know, that piano, the descending piano line from the track, and then somehow holding the last notes for an insanely long time, like stretching them where you can hear it's like too stretched out and it's glitching and stuttering. And like, there's lots of weird artifacts and hiss and stuff because they've like pushed this sound too far, but it's kind of just like a little piano piece to like, almost like a little, I don't know what to call it, like a virtuoso performance of like, you want to see how long we can stretch a sound, you know?
I think I like the idea of this one more than Adverse Camber, but Adverse Camber is maybe more enjoyable to listen to. But this one, what the hell's the name? We don't have them. We don't have it written down. Today Retrieval. It's annoying that they're both the same song. I like how this one is that like crazy time stretch thing. And again, is that for piano being just played, you know, from the recording and then, you know, through effects stretched? Is it somebody, you know, re-recording that piano, you know, playing it sort of thing? Like, those are the sort of questions I think that would answer the collab or not kind of thing. But, you know, it's really interesting. I think, too, in this one, it basically completely gets rid of that marimba. Which is pretty strange. I think anybody who listens to the original track would include the marimba. You know, it's sort of like the iconic, you know, that piano, you know, thing, but also the marimba. You know, it's cool and an interesting thing for them to do, to just, you know, nix that.
It's more like just playing with sound, like playing with technology, mm-hmm. than actually composing anything. But I must say that, like, as an A side and a B side, I think these end up being like just a really cool little package. Like,
they really do work together. I think you even, like you said, how the end of the first one like sort of starts with that. I think it kind of plays almost as one piece. It definitely, this one feels closer to like an EP than, you know, maybe even like a collaborative EP than any other, you know, remix sort of thing.
Heard from some listeners on this one. Listener Wendell wrote, "Adverse Camber is kind of what you'd expect AE to do with the source material, and it's just as well done and interesting as you'd expect. Focuses on the marimba in the original, a fun little loop at the end too. Today Retrieval foregrounds the piano from the original. It sounds like a piano that has come to life, creeping about the attic of an old house." Wendell adds, "If you're talking innovation / tech, the creepy attic piano in Tortoise's remix, bending of sound, there's some typo or a copied it wrong. The bending of sound was some next level shit when it came out in 1998, the same year as LP5. To my ears, then it was more innovative than LP5. Listener Darren named it his ninth favorite AE remix. Listener Tom wrote, "Adverse Camber on the A side is too plinky plonky for my taste, but I really like the sparse feel and distortions of the other one." Any thoughts about any of those comments? I kind of agree. And I was like re-listening to LP5 after all the hype of the reissues coming, and it's like, I love LP5, but it has such a like small sound palette, like deliberately, right? But it just doesn't experiment with sound. It kind of uses like pretty basic, like clean sounds to create lots of different cool tracks. So I agree, like hearing this the same year as LP5, it'd be like, wow, now this is some sound experimentation.
Yeah, again, it's were they just in that mode already? Did this, you know, sort of inspire that? It's hard to tell.
All right, well, we'll move on to the next one. Another one I like very much, Tried by 12, Autechre Mix. This is a remix of Tried by 12 from East Flatbush Project's 1996 single of the same name, released on a 1998 remix album called Tried by 12 Remixes. What'd you think of this one?
You know, this is one of the ones when I was originally listening to the whole compilation, this one would sort of get on my nerves a little bit because, and I think it was mostly like once I put it in this playlist and focused on it more individually, I came to like it because it would really kind of get on my nerves to just have some rap and all, especially because like where I put the headphones on, you know, there's some swearing in this one, but I ended up really liking it. I mean, it's been said a million times by us and by other people, like, you know, we'd love to hear like a good rapper on, you know, some Autechre sort of beats, you know, and I think we're sort of getting here. You know, we also got it with one from your list last episode, the Bug. I don't really like the Bug as a rapper or in general, so that didn't do it for me. I'm not really familiar with East Flatbush Project ahead of this, but I thought it was really cool. You know, the beat is just such like a great hip hop beat that is also experimental, which is, you know, what everybody always wants from, you know, that you know, mystical Autechre, you know, hip hop rap album. I think we actually, like, this might be the closest we ever get to it. I love that like pitter pattery sound of the snare and bass. You know, like the bass drum has like just a little bit of distortion on it to you know, kind of make it crunchy, where it's almost like those two sounds like bleed into each other, like the end of one and the beginning of another is almost the same, you know, sound. It's really cool. And then to the way the vocals are kind of like warbly, almost like underwatery sounding, yeah, like throughout it. I think it works pretty well, especially, you know, divorced from all the other remixes and just on their own. You know, like if this was just a song on this rap group, I'm not sure which, you know, album, I would be pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, I too like came to love this one and had the same exact experience where it's like, listening to it in preparation, it would always sort of annoy me because it's like so abrasive and like just slams out of nowhere in the middle of these pretty chill tracks. But in isolation, I like came to absolutely adore it. The original I know is like kind of a classic. I wasn't familiar with it before this. I mean, East Flatbush Project seems kind of weird because like they just have a couple singles, like never released an album. Mm-hmm. I think they released sort of an album, but it's really just a compilation of some of these singles with some remixes and stuff. And you know, I know it's a classic and people are going to like be pissed off about this, but it's kind of like one of these, you know, the one of the many, many still wonderful, but just RZA ripoffs of the mid 90s. Like it's just a Wu-Tang like beat and it's, you know, very minimal in a RZA kind of way, like this very clunky drum shuffle with like a very plucky like Japanese instrument, right? You can imagine RZA adding like a kung fu thing over it, but it's got this like very bendy kind of plucky sound, and Autechre kind of like pitch it down, which is neat because the kind of bendiness of that sound, like it draws attention to the wobbling of it when it's even slower, you know, like how it's woozing in and out of key, you know? And then like, I struggle to even know how to describe this. Cause I just wrote down, like, they've like digitally sandblasted every part of this track. Like the beat is like, yeah, very punchy, very grainy noise. Of course the vocals have been like digitally destroyed, but then something very weird happens on this remix that I'm obsessed with, which is, I don't know how they did this or what the hell is going on here. Another mystery, just like on the Tortoise track, but there is a digitally destroyed lead vocal. And then accompanying it is a second clean vocal. They sound like separate takes, but the original only has one vocal. So I suspect they have just fucked with it to make it sound like a separate take. Like that is my theory. And it sort of joins in on some lines. So then, okay, so that's weird, right? To have to turn a single vocal thing into two rappers. And then the track like gets more chaotic, like where you get like this kind of wall of just that blasted, like pure noise. And then a kind of scrambled, like almost psychedelic, like just scramble of vocals plays over the second half. And it's almost like we do the song again. You know, the track is twice as long as the original. Yeah. And I just started to think like, what is up with this? It's like, they kind of decided, let's double everything. Like let's make, instead of one rapper, it's two rappers. And then we'll do the song twice as well. Like they just were like piling the song on top of itself over and over again, like something totally bizarre and brilliant about this.
Yeah. I mean, that's why when I was talking a little bit, you know, before you, I said, you know, I don't know if it's a rapper or a group because I didn't realize that it's just one person. And so, yeah, I sort of took those doubled vocals at face value. But that's a good, I mean, that might be a little, you know, Easter egg or something that they like doubled the everything, you know, including the song itself sort of thing. I mean, you know, probably just filling up the 12 inch kind of thing. But yeah, that's really neat. I didn't put two and two together, if you will.
Yeah, well, I mean, it actually came out on this compilation. And speaking of that, there's an Autechre comment on this. The guys were asked, what was the deal with Tribe by 12? How did so many great experimental producers get on board to remix? Did you have a lot of fun putting yours together? It's an all-time favorite for me. I love the vocal processing so much. Sean replied, Tribe by 12 happened because that guy Seven, I think that's his name, was pretty pushy, if I remember correctly. Glad it did, though. He had a good list of artists there, like who the fuck would think to ask Saluta Lita? Don't know that person. And he continues, yeah, it was tons of fun, especially splitting the vocal up into two people. Okay, so there we go. So I didn't read that close enough, but he did split the original vocal to sound like two people, I think. And then I think somebody else sort of mentioned the release. So you want to read the listener comments?
Listener Eric says, one of my all-time favorite tracks. The beat is so thick and satisfying, and the vocal processing is amazing. I love how the first half has the vocal heavily processed, but mostly still intact. Then the second half just stretches and mangles it into oblivion. By the way, it's worth checking out the entire Tried by 12 Remixes album. Lots of weird IDM producers contribute to it for some reason, including Square Pusher and Funk Story. Wrong. The quality varies a lot, but it's an interesting listen. And then Wendell goes on to say, pretty dark lyrics, classic hip-hop track. AE bring a looseness to the beat and creative sound design to the track. It's not surprising remix, but it's oh so good.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. It's another one that I probably should have put on my list. I think it's just fantastic. But you want to move on to the next one?
Yeah, up next we've got Spangle, Autechre Remix. It is a remix of Spangle from Seafeel's 1994 EP, Stare Through. The track also closed out the original version of Warp's Artificial Intelligence 2 compilation. Autechre's remix was released on a 2003 single called Autechre Remix of Spangle by Seafeel. In the 2013 Ask Autechre Anything, Sean clarified that they gave Seafeel their remix before Bass Cadet came out in 1994. Since Seafeel remixed Autechre on that EP, Sean adds, we did the swap at the same time, roughly. I don't know why Warp didn't release it. Lightweights.
So I was a little bitter about that. This is my, like what you had earlier about the Stereolab one, like the one that I think everybody loves that I'm not sure how I feel about it. I might not really like it because the original is perfect. I think it's like an absolute masterpiece. The original. I don't think anybody disputes that. It's like, you know, we talked about it on the Artificial Intelligence 2 episode, but like this kind of gorgeous chiming loop, like very minimalist and like kind of clunky, like pots and pans kind of a beat. And then this like woozy, almost spaghetti Western, like lead melody or like multiple melodies like that. And then what Autechre does with it is like, this will sound dismissive, but they kind of like turn it into a Selected Ambient Works 2 track. Like, and the way that I feel like many people after that album came out probably were like, I could do that. That's so brilliant. Like, why didn't I ever think to do that? And what they do is they just take some of those bendy leads and turn them into like very watery kind of, you know, these underwater, like kind of droney sounds. Just everything is drenched in reverb, some kind of like delicate pads underneath, like kind of add a new sort of mysterious like chord movement that wasn't present on the original. At a certain point, I guess we get like these kind of high feedback swells, but it just remains kind of like this drifting murk. And yeah, at a certain point we get this kind of like clickety clockety kind of horse trot of a beat that like comes in like very distantly, and then it just kind of stops and returns to being pure drift. I feel like they took a perfect and like very strikingly original track and turned it into like an Aphex copy. Is this heresy for me to be saying?
I'm glad you said it because I basically agree. You know, I felt the same way because I know when this one, you know, recently got released or what was it? They reissued all the Seafeel things. So, you know, popped up and everyone was talking about it. You know, I listened to it and I sort of felt like I was missing out on something. I love ambient music. I love all that stuff. But yeah, this one it sounds, I agree, a little, you know, Selected Ambient Works kind of thing. I think like it could, it's a good like bass. What does it clock in at? Like 12 minutes or so?
Yeah.
I feel like if you wrote it up and then, you know, that horse click, clickety clack, I think you called it, starts coming. Yeah. If you rode that for a while, basically if you made this song 35, 45, an hour, minutes, you know, like an all in kind of thing, even if you just looped it, I think it would have a lot, it would have a lot, you know, more effect. It would be worth more. I think it just sort of, you know, ambient music doesn't play well with shortness, I think, and not that, you know, 12 minutes is short. I just think it doesn't fully, I don't know. I just don't feel like it fully like breathes. I can't like in only 12 minutes. I can't get inside of it and then, you know, hang out there for a little bit. It's just like,
I could see that. But I think my problem is that they chickened out by adding a beat. Like, Yeah, it was just ambient drift, and I feel like they were too nervous. Like, we can't have no beat on it. It can't just be the same thing for 12 minutes so people can zone out. And maybe just 12 minutes of the ambience would be sufficient for people to kind of zone out in an ambient way. But they had this kind of, I think, kind of stupid beat, honestly. And then, like, and then they chicken out of that, too.
Yeah.
Like, they just let it vanish and return to the drift. I just think it's, like, a very weird construction of the track that just seems a little, and you know, we probably should have talked about this earlier because it clearly is like from 1994, but you know, I thought it would be fun to kind of return to the early days at the end of this episode here, and it's like, it feels a little amateurish. I feel like so terrible saying this shit, but I just find it like a little disappointing.
No, I agree, and you know, I didn't really think about it because, you know, I put my playlist in the list of, you know, in chronological order too. So, yeah, I mean, it is a little less bad, I think, if you place it in 94. You know, the chickening out is more forgivable, I think. You know, they're not big names at this point. You know, I don't think they had any sort of, like, pull to do an hour version of this or something.
Because I
think you're right about the beat, too. It's, if you're going to do 12 minutes, I think, yeah, you just leave that out. You go full ambient, you know, commit to it. Or you do the beat and you do this you know, morphing thing that moves so slowly throughout such a long time, which is sort of what I want. But, you know, you could go either way. I agree. But yeah, I mean, when you place this in 94, I think it's forgivable that they would, chicken out on doing something like that.
Yeah, but then at the same time, if you listen to it in 1994, I think it would sound like the absolute glut of Saw 2 ripoffs that must have been coming out around the time. It just feels like, I know that Saw 2 is like so brilliant, and part of its brilliance is that it's so simple that you're immediately inspired, like, I could do this, but it's like, don't. Like, nobody do this. Like, he did it, and I don't think anybody should try to copy Saw 2 because it just ends up sounding like really weak for some reason. Like, Aphex captured some magic on that thing, and don't try it.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. I mean, there's so, you know, people always say, you know, about art, you know, like, oh, you know, my kid could have done that. They didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't do it.
Yeah.
Aphex did it. You know,
but then weirdly,
move on.
I mean, I guess the same thing happens in art. You know how sometimes, like, you see like paintings where it's like, this is clearly, you know, a Mondrian, like you're just Mondrian,
but yeah, like you're just doing Rothko or something. Yeah, exactly.
You see that a lot. But anyway, we got a lot of comments on this, so I'll read like the first couple and then toss it over to you, listener Kevin. And these are people who are all going to be mad at us, I'm assuming. No. But
former listeners,
please forgive us. Listener Kevin called this one of his favorite remixes. Listener Tom wrote, unlike most of the others, it's really recognizable as a remix. The original is quite pleasant, but this is ethereal. It starts up with the ending of the original, so play them back to back for maximum effect. Listener Wendell wrote, quote, just some gorgeous ambience here. I only recently learned of this remix myself. So you feel were interesting and that they were a band using rock instruments and effects to do, quote, electronica and have some great songs. I do agree with that. You want to read this next one?
Yeah. Listener Joe says, the first remix I listened to was Spangle. The original is one of the most perfect, genre-defying, and influential electronic songs of all time. That is not only a timeless, endlessly listenable classic, but a song that influenced so many artists that came afterwards. I was a bit worried to hear what Ottegger would do with it, since I can't imagine improving upon perfection, and I was delighted to find that they captured much of the spirit of the original, but gave it its completely own identity. This remix reminds me a lot of Boards of Canada's pre-warp old tunes work, which was very minimalist and haunting, with small details deep down in the mix really carrying the track. I love how melodic all of the random seeming sounds actually are. This is the closest I've ever heard of them come to the style of Saw 2, which to my ears is still a lot more minimalist than even this. But it's cool to hear what they could have done in the style if they had pursued it more. I think that they might have used their remix work to explore places that they never did in their main discography far more than in their guest com material. I don't think this remix reaches anywhere near the heights of the original, but it is worth existing. This might sound like a backhanded compliment, but whether it is worth existing is pretty much the gold standard by which I rate remixes.
I agree with that too. As not much of a remix fan, more of a major statement fan, but you know, there are some defenses. I'm sorry, guys. We'll move on to the next one. The last one, actually. The Winding Ladder Autechre Mix. This is a remix of The Winding Ladder from Denier's 2010 EP, Nowhen. And this remix was actually included on the same EP. So what do you think about this one?
This one's cool. You know, this one's pretty out there, but I really dig it. It's just like, I don't know if it's fucking with bit rates or bit crushing or there's bits involved. This is just like these are just sounds being like torn apart, shredded apart, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the original is like one of these, I'm not really a fan of this genre that much, but it's like experimental kind of found object percussion, like just kind of in a random way.
Yeah.
But this time it's clearly like run through effects, all the various sounds here. There's stuff that sounds kind of like dripping, some stuff that ends up sounding like just a bomb of digitized sound, like metallic rippling and stuff. And, you know, what Autechre does with it is kind of interesting. It's like they didn't really change any of the sounds at all. Contrary to usual, they didn't slow it down or stretch it out or like digitize it or anything else. They kind of just chopped it up into these like short repeating loops, and then it kind of releases into like a chime sound, like from the original. And so it has this kind of like start stop thing. Like it almost sounds like it's going to become kind of like a steady beat out of just this madness of experimental found sounds. But it keeps like stopping. And then toward the end, it does sort of like a twist by becoming a steadier beat, but like, I don't know how to describe it, but in the way you least expected, where like this kind of deep, like groan sound becomes like this kick pattern and like a ride kind of bell sound ends up sort of repeating. It, you know, it's sort of interesting. It's like we talked last time about these tracks, like when they would remix these really experimental tracks and make them normal in like a very surprising and kind of fun way. And here it's like they keep threatening to do that, but like they keep it quite weird, but like in an entirely different kind of weird from the original.
I think, you know, I agree with you, like that genre of, you know, sort of found sound thing. You know, I got an affinity for it. I don't love it, but it, you know, it's fine. But I think what they do here is pretty cool, to like take that and then sort of, you know, threaten to structure it. And just that threat is enough to like make it like infinitely more listenable than the original sort of thing. I mean, because I feel like that genre, you know, it's cool. I like it from like a you know, always sort of like an academic standpoint. You know, it's kind of that thing that it's more fun to think about than to actually listen.
I kind of like it when it's mixed into like a pure avant-garde jazz trio or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Duo.
Like,
but I just never like when it's just solo like hitting on things.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like Autechre here sort of like adds that jazz trio to it. Not specifically, just like it, you know, I mean, not literally, but just in that threat of like destruction, you know, in the same way like a free jazz sort of, you know, thing would be as well.
Yeah, because the original actually sounds a lot like that DJ Food track of just like a sample bank of like interesting sounds. And they kind of turn it, but I like what you say, which is like usually we hear remixes and even Autechre tracks where like the fun part about them is that they're like always threatening to turn into like pure chaos. And this is just the opposite. It's like kind of chaos that keeps threatening to form into something, which is kind of neat. Now, this one, it might not actually be that popular with our listeners. Not many people mentioned it, but listener Joe did highlight it and added this really interesting comment, which is kind of why I wanted to talk about it. He writes, "Their mix of The Winding Ladder by Denier seems like it might have been their first time dipping their toes into the style of spacey, bubbly, noisy tracks like Wet Gellis Casual, Shim Ripple, and the like." I think to that I would add like some of the Japanese bonus tracks and stuff like that, the later ones. But Joe continues, "I think that the original track might have actually influenced the way they use this style, and this is one of the only remixes I've heard by them where their original, or where their version sounds quickly noticeably connected to the original." So I agree with that, and that it's neat that they don't change the fundamental sounds, I think, at all. It's just like how they're assembled and piled on top of each other and stuff. But I don't know. I kind of, in thinking about this, it's true, right, that they weren't doing any of this kind of thing at this time, like 2010, right? They were doing like pretty straight music in 2010, like especially on Oversteps, right? And by the time we get to LSEC and NTS and stuff, we get a lot of these tracks that are very inspired by this kind of like a pure experimental, just like found objects kind of thing. But what I think is interesting about it, and this is just a theory, but that like they might have at this time started to get interested or reinterested in this style of music, but like saw it as a challenge, like could we create all of these found sounds from code, like from the ground up? Like that's what's kind of neat about how they do it. That's why I like listening to these tracks more than I like listening to the kind of stuff that Denier is doing personally.
Yeah. And, you know, one negative about, you know, this whole playlist thing and this compilation is it is sort of sometimes hard to remember, you know, what year you're in and what
right.
main albums you're around. And this was one, you know, if you just asked me, I think I would like place it in the NTS LSEC, you know, sort yeah. of time. And so for it to be, you know, like pre all that by a pretty good amount is pretty crazy. I think Joe makes a good point. And in fact, that's sort of why I picked this one, you know, for, you know, we didn't get a ton of emails about this one, but, yeah. but it just seemed one of the more interesting ones in their remix catalog, because it definitely seems to be something a little different.
Yeah, it was nice to get a later track in here, even if maybe it technically that was, didn't qualify.
That was the
like
other
one
thing.
Of our listeners' favorites.
About 99% of the ones everyone continuously emailed about were from the 90s and stuff. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
it was trying to spread.
And of course, we talked about a lot of our listeners' favorites on our own list last
that
time.
Too,
but
too. Yeah.
That is all 10 of our selected listeners' favorite AE remixes. Before we wrap up, I want to read this nice email that listener Mark sent us after our last episode. He writes, "I'm very late to the podcast, but loving it. You've rekindled my love of AE's work, and they've been on heavy rotation a lot lately. I still think LP5 is my favorite album. Of the remixes I've heard, my favorite by far is their remix of Jail of Freedom on Soft Ballet Form's Remix for Ordinary People. That steam hammer of a bass still gets me." I think that was on your list, Dan, but mm-hmm. we both definitely like that one. And welcome to the fold, Mark. Thank you so much for the kind words. He also added, and this is kind of a side thing I thought was funny, "On another note, I'm not sure if it's a UK versus US thing, but your pronunciation of incunabula freaks me out. I've always called it incunabula, which I'm sure is the way AE pronounce it." Now, from what I understand, you know, like an incunabulum refers to like, I can't remember, like books.
It's like a tome, like, right?
But it's like printed books before like the widespread adoption of the printing press, like very early printed books or something. But I'm pretty sure that is pronounced incunabulum. And I think incunabula is the singular. I think it is related to that actual word. And that's why I pronounce it that way. But what do you think of incunabula?
Well, you probably don't remember this, but when we first started doing this podcast, that, you know, that was the first episode, I said incunabula and you changed it. So if incunabula is correct, then I'm right and you're wrong. And a year later, I'm getting my comeuppance. I did, somebody posted on the Autechre subreddit, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, maybe. It was like a spelling bee, like a clip from a spelling bee. And the kid got incunabula as the word.
Really?
But I can't remember how they pronounced it. So that the story's pretty useless.
Shit, that would have solved it.
I'd pull it up right now, but you know, Reddit's search is awful.
Yeah, well, let me just you know, just clarify, we are like guessing on all of these pronunciations. Like, do not take our word on anything.
No, I remember, like, I've spent hours on some, especially some of the earlier ones, like trying to find the way, like an interview where they say the album title or something, you know, just to make sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, that all stops pretty early on, so
yeah,
it's hard.
All right, well, wrapping up for real this time, we talked about the bigger picture last episode, how we feel about Autechre's remix work as a whole, how Autechre seems to approach and think about the art of remixing, etc. And I know we touched on that again in regard to Wendell's email at the top, but I'm wondering if spending time with these additional remixes changed your feelings about any of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just basically, like, I keep saying over and over, like, really focusing in on different sets made me, when I listened to the whole thing, there were times where I was like, oh, this kind of sucks. I don't really like these. But once I narrowed down and looked at them up close, there's never really any I disliked anymore, you know?
Right.
It makes me where I would almost, you know, like I think I'll continue to add some of them into my, you know, listening rotation, especially the ones that we didn't, focus in on. Because I guess we should remind everybody there was like 50 something or how many, there was a ton. It was like 8 hours worth. So, you know, there's still some we haven't, you know, deep dove into. So I think in my personal life, I may do such.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think this kind of confirmed what we were saying last time, which is like, when you kind of zoom in on some of these remixes, like you really come to appreciate them in a way that it's hard to do when you're listening to a lot of them. And like, you know, I was doing my list. I worked really hard at narrowing it down. But then as soon as you sent me your list, there were a bunch of tracks on it where I was like, shit, this is better than some of the stuff I picked. Same. And then same thing happened this time where like once I really zoomed in on a couple of these, I was like, damn, these are like better than some of the stuff I picked. So there's like lots of treasure to be found, but it's like, it's hard. And you know, to like what Wendell said before, it's more fun to encounter them in the wild. The problem is in 2021, you are not going to encounter any of these in the wild. They're not going to be on the radio. You're never going to hear them in the club. If clubs and stuff ever reopen, and it's safe to go to them again. But, you know, the point is you're only ever going to hear them like through probably the Lexier compilation. And it's just like, you know, it just kind of proves, I think, that it's worth, you know, maybe just pick a handful and zoom in on them for a little while before you move on to the rest of them. Cause there is lots of fun stuff to discover. I think the other thing I realized is like when we did our first episode, we were of course focusing on the order cause we were trying to rank them. So I was listening to them that way instead of chronological. Now this time we did it chronological. And it just sort of revealed for me that I think I find the like big boom, like the kind of 94 to 96 less exciting than the slightly later, you know, like the 96 mm-hmm. to 99 remixing. And they start slowing down a lot in that time. But I just feel like they really get much more adventurous. Like I think you can kind of hear that they're sick of doing remixes. And so they're just going to use it to like experiment and push farther than they even are on their own stuff. I think that's why you hear all these little hints at like way later sounds, because they're like, well, if we have to do this, why don't we, you know, just really see how far we can take it, like really fuck it up.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets fun for me, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I 100% agree. I mean, you know, there's that initial slog. Slog's not the correct word, but you know, it's just like, you know, that explosion. There's so many of them, you know, it becomes, you know, a quantity over quality sort of thing.
Yeah,
and I mean, also, they're more amateur at that point in their career, you know, too. So, you know, it's nice to see as they go along. It does feel like they use it as, you know, the sketch pad kind of for what will come.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, we are moving on from the remixes. I know there's still a lot uncovered, but we did dive deep into about 30 of them, which I think is pretty impressive. Any closing thoughts on this chapter, this remix side of Autechre, this chapter of the Autechre journey?
No, like I said, I mean, you know, interested to dig into those, you know, other ones that we didn't yet, but also glad to listen to something else after, you know, couple months of this.
I'm glad to move on, even if we have to move on to the stuff with the Hafler trio.
I didn't think about that. All right, well, what do you think about our listener favorite remixes? We'll do another listener email episode soon, so be sure to write us gonkcastpod@gmail.com. next topic coming in 2 weeks, Autechre's collaborations with the Hafler trio. We want your opinions and hot takes. gonkcastpod@gmail.com. if you like the show, help us out, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Look us up YouTube and stay connected on Twitter and Instagram. Those are @GonkCastPod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.